Our monthly Underground History segment is about history, but it's also at heart about digging, because that's what it takes to get to the history buried in the ground. And as we talk about archaeological dig after dig after dig, you may wonder where all the diggers come from. There are the leads, like our regular partners at the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, or SULA, and they bring students along. But when you see pictures of these digs, you realize it takes lots of people to get the work done, and that's the kind of thing the Oregon Archaeological Society helps with. Chelsea Rose, a researcher at SULA, is in this, well, not in the studio, but on the phone with us this time. Chelsea, good to have you back, as always.
Hi, great to be here.
And Steve Satterthwaite joins us from the Oregon Archaeological Society. Steve, welcome.
Thank you.
I noticed the creation of OAS was a response to a loss of potential archaeological sites. Tell us about that.
The original organization was formed back in the middle 50s as an excavation group of volunteers. At the time, there wasn't much activity from the local or federal government, so our volunteers were going out and doing excavation at various prehistoric sites in this case.
And some of that was about the loss of land due to the damming of the Columbia River, wasn't it?
Right, right. When they started backing the water up, there was a number of sites along the banks, all up and down, that were going to be lost. So the organization went out there and excavated as much as they could.
And then once Celilo Falls was put underwater, that opportunity was gone. So that in part led straight to the creation of the OAS?
Yes, yes, it was. And keep in mind that back in the 50s, the laws on collecting artifacts were entirely different than they are today. So anybody could go out and dig if they wanted to.
Oh, very, very different now. So a lot more restrictions on it now, aren't there?
Oh, yes. Now, you're not really supposed to dig up anything like that without supervision from a licensed archaeology like Chelsea Rose.
Like Chelsea Rose. So, Chelsea, how often do you guys get calls at the lab at the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology for people asking, hey, I wanted to dig this stuff even on my own land. I just want to make sure I'm not going to destroy something.
We get calls all the time about people that are interested in what we're doing. They want to get involved. They want to come out on projects. And one of the things that's always hard for me is we don't always have the right projects to bring people along on. There's timing concerns, safety concerns sometimes, all that stuff. So I was so excited to work with these folks up here in Portland on this project. We're in Newburgh, Oregon right now. Because I realize this is a really great way for folks in our area to get involved, and they can help put them in touch with archaeologists across the state that might need help. So, you know, that helps us to spread the word and also to continue to encourage these people that have an interest in archaeology and, you know, pair them up with somebody who has a need for help.
All right, so you have on the one hand people who want some help digging, on the other hand people who want to help digging but really don't have a lot of expertise?
Yeah. Or maybe nowhere to go kind of channel that energy.
Okay. I noticed, Steve Satterthwaite, that on the registration form for the Oregon Archaeological Society, it says archaeology for the curious. So how many people have come to you and said, I want to learn more?
We currently have about 250 members, and of that probably 30 or 40 are fairly active in the actual excavation. The rest are just curious, just want to know more about archaeology. We have monthly meetings at OMSI, and we have speakers on various subjects of archaeology.
And so it obviously goes beyond just letting them let their curiosity run wild. I mean, you do offer some training, don't you?
Right. Each year in February, we have a six-Saturday session. It's called Archaeology for the Curious. And we give beginners an overview of archaeology and some limited but practical training in excavation.
And what kinds of things do you teach? I'm just curious to know about the specific, how fine the skill set gets when you're working on an archaeological dig.
Well, keeping in mind that these people, in most cases, know very little, we try to give them a little idea of the history of Northwest archaeology. We have a number of speakers that come from Bureau of Land Management, Forest Service. We also give them an overview of the laws so they don't go out and start digging on their own. We have people come in and we give them some experience on the art of excavation. Again, it's very, very limited. Artifact identification and use of compass and GPS.
So six sessions over the course of 6 weeks?
Right. It's six Saturdays in succession, and they are about 6 hours long each session.
And is there a cost for the training?
The cost is $65, and you have to be then a member of the OAS. So our annual membership for individual and family is $30, so it'd be $95 for the session.
And so do you get a certificate that says you've got some level of skills or qualifications to assist on digs?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we give them, if they attend all the sessions, we give them a certificate, and we keep track of it ourselves because people like Fort Vancouver let them come in. If they've completed the course, they can come in during their session in August and do excavation at Fort Vancouver with their staff.
Is there always a dig going on at Fort Vancouver?
Well, there's an ongoing dig all the time at Fort Vancouver, and we participate normally in August, although they do take volunteers for their lab all throughout the year.
We are talking about digging in the ground, as we do with our Underground History segment every month here on The Exchange with our regular guests from the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. Chelsea Rose is with us this time from SULA. Steve Satterthwaite is with us from the Oregon Archaeological Society as we learn more about the training of volunteers to assist with field digs. You can join the discussion on The Exchange. Some questions maybe about archaeological procedures or how you can get into this training. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. When we were talking a little while ago, Chelsea, about the laws that regulate freelance archaeological work, I wondered, A, how stringent they are, and B, if this is sort of like what the utility companies tell us, call before you dig.
Yeah, archaeological sites in Oregon are protected even on private land, so it's really important to collaborate with a professional archaeologist. And that's not, those laws are not intended to stop anybody else from having the fun. They're really meant to make sure that cultural resources, which are non-renewable, so once somebody digs them up, they're gone, that if they are going to be impacted, it's going to be done in a responsible and, correct way to recover the data. So if somebody's going to dig on, an archaeological site on their own property, they still are required to get a permit, which is free, but you do need to, get a professional archaeologist on board because that's the only person that can get that permit. So, and a lot of times archaeologists are happy to collaborate with private citizens, especially if you have a pretty interesting site that might have a lot of research potential. But it always does still kind of come down to money. Archaeology is expensive and time-intensive, and especially the back end of it. It's a lot easier to get people to come help with digging, because that's a really fun part, but the longer part is the analyzing and cleaning and recording and writing up of all the artifacts.
And was that like a 5-to-1 ratio or something?
Yeah, I think it's like 4 days in the lab to every 1 day in the field or something like that, yeah, okay. Or more.
Wow. So, but if people want to dig on their own land, if they're, clearing out space for a new garage or shop or something, would they know in advance that there's an archaeological site there? Or is it the kind of thing where they hit something, they didn't recognize it and go, uh-oh, I better call SULA?
Yeah, so they're not, if they don't know there's anything there, and if they're not doing something, like usually it gets triggered if it's a zoning change, like if you're changing your house to a hotel or something like that. Sometimes that triggers it on a planning level. But otherwise, if somebody's just doing a project around their house and they happen to hit an archaeological site, then they can always stop and call us, we can give them some advice at the university, or even better is to call the State Historic Preservation Office, which will help them, figure out the best course of action, in regards to their project and also how to best protect that resource or, manage it responsibly.
And, of course, that's one of our favorite acronyms, SHPO.
Yeah.
SHPO, the State Historic Preservation Office.
That's right.
Every state has one, right?
Yep, every state has one. And they're very nice folks. Sometimes it can be intimidating to call up there because, you can be afraid that they're going to tell you you can't do your project. But that's not really their motivation. Is definitely just to be stewards for the resource, and they're definitely, they want to be solution-oriented. And if people are, telling them about sites and coming from a place where they want to do the right thing, then they really will work with you.
Let's take a call here. We have Kit in Ashland on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Chelsea Rose and Steve Satterthwaite in our Underground History segment.
Super, thank you. Just a little irony in, I guess it was early 50s when they were setting the foundation for SOU, they found a tusk from a woolly mammoth. And the interesting thing is the picture that appeared in the newspaper back then showed two guys putting it in the trunk of their car.
So does anybody know where that tusk of the woolly mammoth is now?
I just saw the one article. I was doing research for a book I was working on, so no idea, but somebody may have it over their mantle.
Oh, wow. That's interesting to know. Thanks for that story, Kit. Appreciate it. Chelsea, had you heard about that before?
Yeah, it's kind of one of the famous legends of SOU, and I think it's true. I think somebody in town might actually know where it is. But, you know, recently, I think last year or something, they found a bunch of stuff like that up at the university, or Oregon State University, and the archaeologists went out there and excavated. They were doing some kind of on-campus project. And so it's always in the back of our mind whenever we see folks, you know, building new dorms or new buildings on campus or the new, you know, center for where the radio is going to go. We always think, oh, maybe there's another, you know, mammoth or prehistoric creature down there that we'll be able to go look at.
So were you guys over there at the site where JPR is going to go in a few months?
Well, they're doing a bunch of digging there, but I haven't seen anything. I don't think it's a known archaeological site, so they would have to find something for us to, you know, get involved.
Is it like that sometimes in the archaeology business where you know least about what's directly under you all the time than the places that you go to visit to where you know there are things?
Well, that's kind of one of the exciting things about archaeology is there could be stuff anywhere. You know, there's a lot of, especially the historical era, the post-contact era, we do have maps and documents that kind of give us clues where to go, but you never really know where people, you know, built stuff or dumped trash or, you know, so there's always the potential for archaeological resources, which kind of keeps it exciting.
Absolutely. Steve Satterthwaite, let's bring you back in here from the Oregon Archaeological Society. You mentioned Fort Vancouver. Tell us about some other recent digs that the Oregon Archaeological Society has been a party to.
Well, this most recent one with Chelsea, we provided, I think, four or five people. It was a straightaway, just a dig project, trying to find a location of a town. But we've also, every year we go out to the Burns area, to a place called the Rock Shelter with the University of Oregon, and have excavated out in that area for 14, 15 years now. And Fort Vancouver, and there's other societies in Oregon that we work with from time to time. ASCO is the Archaeological Society of Central Oregon, and the Maritime Archaeological Society. People forget sometimes that there's a lot of archaeology right off the shore, and there are regulations for that too.
Wow, all kinds of stuff. The Burns Rock Shelter you mentioned, this is the site of human habitation that predates the Clovis people, is that right?
Dating on this is always a problem. Uh-huh. There are several sites out there that are being excavated by the university. But yes, they're in the contemporary or possibly earlier than Clovis.
All right. So, Chelsea Rose, that brings up a great question, which is how do you know how old something is? I mean, what are the tools you have at your disposal as you dig things out of the ground and try to place them in the context of other times and other societies?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different techniques depending on what type of site you're working on. I primarily work on historical era sites, so we have a lot of artifacts that are pretty diagnostic. When was this bottle made, or when did this ceramic technology come into play? So that helps us date it. But if you're going back earlier in time, then there's a lot of other tools. You can use radiocarbon dating. You can use, there's different ways to date the effect of, I guess, the elements on, like, obsidian. It's like a rind that develops, so you can tell when the tool was created, stuff like that. And so really what you need to do, and this gets back to the idea of why it's so important to work with a professional archaeologist, is because the way we date those things, if you find a campfire and you're carefully able to record how deep it is and what's associated with it, then in theory, the age of the campfire reflects the age of the artifacts around it. Anything below that is older. So if you don't have that really careful association, which is why we're always, you know, excavating in known quantities, like squares and down certain levels at a time, so that we can always have the opportunity to create that association with things that can be dated, and that helps us, you know, kind of tell time going backwards.
So, Steve Satterthwaite, what are some of the tools that the volunteers get to use? I can imagine pickaxes are generally not involved.
No, not normally. Most of the excavations are done, as Chelsea said, in a 1 meter by 1 meter square, and they're going to be using trowels, and then we have screens that we put all the material that we dig up. We put that material through the screens and see if we can find anything. And if we find something, we tag it up, and then that next winter they will look at it in the lab.
You mentioned the training that the Oregon Archaeological Society offers, 6 weeks on consecutive weekends. Is there a requirement for refresher training? Does that have to be renewed every couple of years or something, particularly given the rapid changes in technology these days?
No, we don't have any other requirements, although we do have people who come back from time to time. Most of them, once they get the initial training, will go out in the field, and that keeps them fairly current with current technology.
I noticed that the Oregon Archaeological Society also maintains a library. What's in that?
We do have a library primarily for our members, and it's open during our monthly meetings.
Oh, just at that time, though?
Correct. It's fairly costly to keep these things open all the time, so we're only available during the meetings themselves or by special request.
You know, and Chelsea, when I think about storage of artifacts, let alone libraries, are there just gobs of things that are kept away that the public never gets to see that are just pulled out from time to time?
Yeah, and that is something that archaeologists as a discipline are kind of grappling with. We call it the curation crisis, because the idea is anything we excavate, we then take responsibility for in perpetuity. So Southern Oregon University has an on-campus curation facilities, and we curate things that are excavated locally by us or by other archaeologists in the region. And the trick is to try to not only keep those things safe and relevant for the future so that archaeologists can always go back in and kind of see what you found, but also to try to find ways to make them accessible to people now. So one of the strategies we have figured out is to work with the special collections on campus to do the digital exhibits. So we have one on cans and one on Chinese artifacts. Mm-hmm. We do have visiting scholars that come to look at the artifacts. We do loan a lot of things to the Historical Society for different exhibits, and we bring a lot of stuff out like at Chinese New Year or different events like that where we have an opportunity to kind of show and tell to the public. But that is one of the challenges, to save it in a meaningful way but also make sure it can educate people and it's accessible.
Just a few seconds left. Would you find some fun stuff in Newburgh this summer?
You know, we're still working out here, and we've been here in the heat wave. We were here with all the smoke from the fires up here. So we're hoping that I'm here for 10 days now, and I'm hoping that this one is really going to be when we find something and the weather's a little better.
Okay. Always good to visit with you. Chelsea Rose from the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, our regular partner on the Underground History segment. Mark Tveskov is on sabbatical right now. Steve Satterthwaite from the Oregon Archaeological Society, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
You can find them at OregonArchaeological.org. Don't forget the E, or better yet, just go to JeffExchange.org and find the link on our page.